So we are picking up. We're about halfway through the book of Genesis, and the goal is to finish it tonight. All right, we need to finish it so we actually get to the other books of the Torah, and this isn't just a class on Genesis, and then I'd be taking Dan Rowland's thing. So gotta finish this tonight. All right, so we'll be moving a little quicker through all this. And so really we need to cover the lives of Isaac and Jacob and even like Joseph, okay? So those three main people we're going to be covering tonight. And so before our break, the goal is to get all the way to like Joseph, okay? Then we can do the life of Joseph after the break and all that, okay? And so kind of by way of review a little bit, just briefly, right, of where we're at so far in Genesis. Do you guys remember the theme of Genesis? Yeah, the God who creates, or the God who begins, right? And we see a lot of beginnings happening in Genesis, right? And as we've gone through, right, we've seen creation, that it's God creating for his glory, that he would be honored and magnified and all that, right? But then we have the fall occurs, sin has entered the world. And so then there's this question of how do we get back? How is God going to work his plan to bring man back, to restore that relationship, to restore kind of original creation? Right, and we start to see that unfold throughout Genesis, right? We start to see the line that God is going to use keep narrowing, right? Through, we have like Noah with the flood and different things, right? And then last week we talked about Abraham, right? And the life of Abraham, and really as one of the main patriarchs of the nation, right? That's where we started to see, as we talked about last week, that God was laying the foundation for the nation, right? Laying the foundation to have that international impact. Because as we talked about even before, like with the Tower of Babel and different things, right? When God established nations as a restraint of sin, you needed one nation that could then be a light to the other nations, right? And so with Abraham, we started to see God moving that plan forward of raising up a nation, right? And we're going to see that continuing tonight, okay? But if you remember from Abraham, we learned, right? We learned from him as God is laying that foundation consisted of two main elements, right, which was the Abrahamic covenant and the concept of faith, right? Those were the two main things we talked about last time. And you guys happen to remember when we talked about the Abrahamic covenant, the covenant God made with Abraham, what were the three main elements of that covenant? Do you guys remember? Land, seed, and blessing, right? Land, seed, and blessing, right? Those were the three main elements of what composed the Abrahamic covenant, right? That God is going to work to give his people land, right? Because to be a great nation, you kind of need to have land, right? You need a land as well as you need people. You need offspring. And more specifically, you're going to need the seed, right? We remember we connected the Abrahamic covenant last week with the promises of like Genesis 3:15 that God is going to raise up a seed who is going to be the one to kind of reverse everything, reverse the curse, bring us back to creation, right? And so you need that seed as well. And we see also that element of blessing, right? That it is going to be through Abraham, right? Like Genesis 12:3 talks about, like, it'll be in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed, right? So we see that it is through Abraham and his line that this worldwide blessing, this getting back to original creation is going to take place, okay? And that's really what we saw last week. And so today, right, as we begin talking about the generations of Isaac, right, this next Toledot section here, as we talk a little bit about this with Isaac and with Jacob, what's going to happen here is Moses is going to keep building on this, right? And so what we're going to see is we're going to see even more foundational or core values being laid down for the nation of Israel, right? We saw with Abraham is the Abrahamic covenant and faith. And then in this section, right, covering the lives of Isaac and Jacob, what we're laying down here in Genesis, there's this emphasis, this main point that God is with his people, right? That God is present and he is with his people, and therefore he will fight for his people, right? That's what we're going to see in this section of the life of Isaac and Jacob, okay, that God is with his people. And I'll point it out as we go through, but you're going to see through this time that there's this continuing emphasis, right, where God tells them, hey, I will be with you. I will be with you. I'm going to be with you, you know. And then, like, even like Jacob and Isaac, they're going to recognize, like, God has been with me. He has done this. And even outside people are recognizing, hey, God is with these people, right? And so that's really what this section of Genesis is all about, right, is ultimately showing God is with them. God is on your side. He's going to fight for you, right? And that's going to, again, be foundational for the nation of Israel in the future, right? That he's continually going to be with his people, not abandon them. He's going to be with them, fighting for them, okay? And so that's what we're going to see in these generations of Isaac, okay? That's what the main point of that is, all right? So let's get into it. So we have kind of Isaac and Rebecca picking up on that, right? They're married, and then they're going to have some kids. But before that, right, notice in verse 21, if you're in chapter 25 of Genesis, if you're there, what do we know about Rebecca at this point? She's what? Barren, right? Which, do you guys remember who else was barren before? Sarah, right? Sarah. And so we see kind of a similar thing happening, right? Rebecca's barren, and she's going to conceive and give birth to some kids. And this is starting kind of this continual reoccurrence throughout Scripture, this common theme of women who are barren conceiving and giving birth to children, that whenever that happens, right, throughout Scripture, it's usually like, or not usually, it is like the birth of an important figure in Israel's history. Right, that's like an important thing. Like as soon as this person is going to be born, like they're going to have significance. Right, we see that with like Isaac, and then we're going to see that here with Isaac and Rebecca's kids, and even further, like you can zoom way ahead, like even into the New Testament. Right, at the beginning of the New Testament, one of the first things you have is John the Baptist. Right, his mom was also barren. Right, and then but she conceives and gives birth to John the Baptist, who is obviously important. Okay, and so then on a side note real quick, so that's like an impressive thing, right? That's an impressive thing to take someone who is barren and have them have a kid, right? But then how do you even trump, like what's an even better or greater birth than someone who's barren and then has a kid? What's even better or greater than that? A virgin, right? And so you can start to understand why, like, Jesus, right, is born in that way, because even in his birth, like, he trumps everything else, right? It's like, how can we even step up, like, the scale a little bit more to make it even more impressive? It's like, hey, what about a virgin, right? Like, pretty top notch, very impressive, all right? So we see this is going on, okay? And so she's barren, but then God answers this prayer, and she ends up conceiving, and she has twins, right? Twins. Who are in the womb, and if you read it, they are struggling in the womb, okay? And so as they're struggling, kind of wrestling with each other, I can imagine that is uncomfortable, not fun. In verse 23, what does the Lord say to her? It says, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. All right, so he's pointing out that what you have is you have two kids, that two separate nations are going to come from you. Okay, but then notice here what he says at the end. Very significant, right? The one shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall what? Serve the younger. All right, the older shall serve the younger. All right, we see God's kind of election here at taking place, right? That he is indicating that the younger brother is going to be the one, or the older is going to serve the younger brother, okay? And that's going to come into play as we move forward in this narrative. So keep that in mind, okay? And so they give birth to these kids. The firstborn is Esau, right? And the second, with holding on to his brother's heel as they're coming out, right, is Jacob, right? And you already have in this idea, right, Jacob, that name has that idea of like a wrestler or a schemer, deceiver kind of thing. And you see that even when they're in the womb, they're wrestling, and he's even clenching the heel of his brother, right? And then they wrap up just briefly talking about Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. Okay? And that leads into this next section, where Esau sells his birthright. So we zoom forward a little bit in time. We don't have the exact time here, but they zoom forward, and you have a situation unfold, right? Which hopefully you guys are familiar with the story, where Jacob is cooking, all right? Cooking. It says a stew, but literally it just is like red stuff. Okay, that's what it is. It's just red stuff, all right? It's great. And you have Esau come in from the field, right? And he was exhausted, or you can even say like starving, which in and of itself, that's a little ironic, right? Because what was Esau supposed to be? Yeah, like a very skillful hunter, right? And so it's kind of this ironic thing of like, oh, you don't have food or what, you know, kind of thing. And so he comes in exhausted and all that, and he asks Jacob to let me eat some of that red stew or that red stuff, right? And Moses makes a side point here of, therefore his name was called Edom, right? Edom, that's the nation that comes from Esau, right? And the name Edom, literally, that's the word for red stuff. Okay, that's what it is. So really, that name is a constant reminder to Esau and his descendants of what they gave up for, like, giving up what we're going to see this, like, birthright, right, is for some red stuff, right? And so, as I just kind of mentioned, Jacob, what does he demand in order to give him some of this red stuff? The birthright. Okay, the birthright. And really, what that was, right, understanding the birthright is crucial. It's not only related to, like, he's going to receive, like, possessions, kind of that thing, but more specifically, it's like that he, as the one possessing the birthright, is going to be the one who carries on, like, the family kind of heritage. Right? He's going to be the one who carries on this heritage, which if you think about this line of individuals, right, this line of like Abraham and Isaac, what is he going to be carrying on? The what covenant? The Abrahamic covenant, right? That's like the heritage that he's carrying on, all right? So this is very significant. This is not a light thing. And we see right away that who has a desire, even if kind of going about it wrongly, who has a desire for this heritage? Jacob, right? Because notice what it says about Esau at the end there in verse 34. He despised the birthright, right? He didn't really care about it, okay? And so right away you have this difference between the two, that one, even though he's kind of scheming and figuring out how to like get this birthright, he at least has the desire for it, right? And so he gets his birthright from Esau, his brother, okay? And what we see here, as I kind of mentioned before, and we're going to see this time and time again in the life of Jacob, is very much that Jacob is a schemer, right? He's a schemer, this kind of wrestler person, right? He's always thinking of how can I use this situation and manipulate this to get what I want, right? And exactly right here in this situation, right? Instead of just giving his brother some food, he's like, he recognizes the situation. He's like, hey, I'm going to get something out of this, right? Give me your birthright. I'll give you some of this red stuff, right? He's always thinking, always trying to scheme, okay? And we have to keep that in mind, okay? So Esau sells his birthright. It now belongs to Jacob, okay? In the next chapter, chapter 26, we see God kind of reaffirming his promises to Isaac, okay, where we see this repetition of the promises of like the Abrahamic covenant to again show that this is in fact being passed on to Isaac. They are his promises as well. But specifically notice in verse 3, okay, verse 3, as he talks about this, he tells him to sojourn in this land, okay, don't leave this land, we've seen that before, okay, and what does he say? And I will what? Be with you, all right, I will be with you. Right, that's that theme that we started, that I mentioned before, that we're going to start seeing. He tells him, I'm going to be with you. Right, trust that. I will be with you. Okay, so we have these promises continuing forward. God's plan is still moving forward through Isaac. Okay, that's the point of those five verses. Okay, and then we see Isaac interacting with Abimelech. All right, in this next section, the rest of chapter 26. All right, essentially here. Yeah, the rest of chapter 26, interacting with him. And we see Isaac kind of taking a play out of his father's playbook, right? Where he does the same thing, where as they go and interact with this guy in Gerar, he tells his wife Rebecca, hey, say you're my sister so they don't steal you and kill me type of thing. And just like with Abraham, what ends up happening? God intervenes, right? And we see that same situation of the part of the Abrahamic covenant, that I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you, right? That this is still in effect. And so essentially what you have here is what? God is treating Isaac like just like Abraham, right? It's like confirming that these promises are moving forward. They still stand. And we have like almost like an exact situation to show like this has been passed on, right? This has been passed on. Isaac is now this one, okay? But then notice also, like in verse 12, all right, it says that Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year a hundredfold. And the Lord blessed him, right? And he became rich and gained more and more until he became very wealthy. Possessions, livestock, all those things, right? Again, we see God blessing him, right? We see that it is, he's making him into this great nation, right? He's continuing that process to make them into this great nation, okay? Just like God had promised before. This is unfolding, all right? And then at the very end of the chapter, verse 34 and 35, you see Esau taking a wife, right? And what's bad about the wife, or actually he takes multiple wives. What's bad about the wives he takes for himself?
Local.
Huh? Local. Yeah, they're local. They're the part of the Canaanites, right? Which, do you remember who said, don't let like my son marry a Canaanite and all that? Who said that originally?
Abraham,
right? For Isaac. And so because he understood what? The detrimental influence the Canaanites would have on them. Okay? And but we see Esau kind of ignoring that, okay? And instead marrying the Canaanites, and we're going to see it does have like a bad impact on him, okay? Kind of coming true. And so kind of further disqualifying himself from the chosen line, right? It's kind of that process is continuing, okay? All right, and we come into chapter 27, okay? We're moving a little quicker tonight. All right, and so again, this is hopefully a story familiar to a lot of you guys with this blessing, right, where you have this idea of this blessing coming out, okay? Where you have Isaac calling Esau, right, to come to him. Time has passed. Isaac's old. Eyes are dim. Doesn't see well. Or he could not see, right? And he calls Esau, right, and talks about how go out, kill like an animal, like prepare for me a meal like I like, right, and then I will bless you, right? And this idea of the blessing, right, kind of tied in with this birthright, kind of the role of that is to affirm that, like, this is going to be the heir, right? So that it's kind of affirming what the birthright showed, okay? And so in this case, who should have Isaac called for to bless in this situation based on what we knew earlier? Jacob, right? Because remember, the older shall serve the younger, right? They knew from the beginning that Jacob was supposed to be the one, right? And so what Isaac here is doing is what? He's kind of scheming in a sense too, to try to work with Esau to bless him, right? Which was not what God had ordained, right? That's not what God had said, okay? And so then as Esau goes out, right? Who overheard this plan? Rebecca, right? And so she quickly kind of gets Jacob together and she's like, hey, this is happening. I'm going to make a meal. She does it all quick. And they have this plan, right? They're going to put Esau's cloak on Jacob. They cover him with like hair because Esau's hairy. Jacob is not, right? And they have this like foolproof plan, right? Which seems like so great. This is awesome. Like, we got this, all right? We're going in. But then, what's the one thing that kind of almost sabotages the whole plan, right? When Jacob does what? When he speaks, right? As soon as he speaks, and it's like the one thing they don't account for. It's like they have this grand plan, and then it's like Jacob speaks, and it's like, wait, who are you, right? Like, you're not Esau. And yeah, he kind of went over, he tried to change his voice at that point or something like that. But no, right? Like, and so we see their plan potentially start to unravel, right? But it doesn't, right? It doesn't end up unraveling. And you have to kind of ask that question, like, why? Was it because their plan was just so great and foolproof that it succeeded? No, right? Because who was working behind it to make it succeed? God, right? God was the one working behind it. That's why, because I'm sure you could tell, right, with your, like, parents, if you have children, right? If I'm sure you could tell the difference of their voices, right? And you can tell if one suddenly is like, hey, it's me. And then you're like, wait, you're not the sibling. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's me. You know, like, and get their voice gets deeper, right? That type of thing. That's, right? That's, you know that. And so the only way this succeeds is because God works in it to make it succeed, right? And so essentially you have in the situation, everyone's schemes or plans are kind of falling apart. right? Jacob and Rebekah's, it kind of works, right? Because they end up getting the blessing and all that, right? But it shouldn't have outside what God does. And we even see like Isaac's plan with Esau, that fails, right? And so really the only person's plan who kind of works is God's, right? And that's the point. And this is important to note with the life of Jacob is what we see here as well, we're going to see elsewhere in his life, is this kind of motto, which I had a professor had this motto for the life of Jacob, which I thought was great and easy to remember, right? Is this idea that Jacob schemes, but God redeems, right? Jacob schemes, but God redeems. And that's really what the nature of this is. And you see this right away in this plan. Like they have this elaborate plan, this scheme, and then at the very moment when they implement it, it like falls apart, or it should have. But who intervenes? God. Right? And that's what we're going to see time and time again in the life of David. Jacob. He will continually try to scheme and work his way, but ultimately it's only because God is with him and God is fighting for him that things are going to succeed or move forward. Right? That's what's going to happen. Okay? So their plan kind of works, right? Like he gets the blessing. Esau finds out, and is Esau too happy about that? No, right? No, he wants to do what? Wants to kill him, right? Wants to kill him. And so then what does Jacob have to do? He has to run, right? And so we see this next section of Jacob sent away, right? Like Esau wants to kill him. And that's, again, another fact in showing that his plan didn't really work. Because what? Now he's getting, like, kicked out of the land because he has to because his brother wants to kill him, right? So plan's not going all that great, okay? And so he needs to be sent away, right? Rebekah recognizes that. Isaac recognizes that. He needs to go, okay? And so they tell him to go to Padan Aram, all right, which is where Rebekah's relatives are, okay? So he heads there, and we see that he needs to leave, okay, with that. And he's going to find a wife there because, remember, Isaac then tells him also, hey, don't take a wife from the Canaanites, right? Don't do it. And so he heads in that way, in that direction, right, to go to Rebekah's relatives, okay? And then on a side note, in contrast to upon hearing, like, kind of Isaac saying, hey, don't marry these Canaanites, what does Esau do to kind of dig himself further in a hole? Marries another Canaanite. That doesn't go well, all right? Kind of what that is. All right, so back to Jacob, picking up in verse 10 of chapter 28. All right, we have Jacob arriving at this place called Luz or Luz, and he's going to rename it Bethel, okay? And it's a very significant place. So this is on his way as he travels to his relatives, all right, as he's going. Says he sleeps, right? He sleeps, and he has this dream about a ladder or a stairway kind of thing that's reaching from heaven to earth, and you have angels ascending and descending on it, right? Again, maybe something semi-familiar to you guys, okay? And really, what this seems to be kind of representing is that God is present with him, right? That's what a lot of people take this as representing, as this dream, this vision is essentially declaring to Jacob that God has not left you, he is with you, right? This is to show that God is with you. Okay, that's what the point of that is. And again, zooming ahead a little bit, well, not a little bit later, a lot later in John chapter 1, if you remember Jesus talking to some of his disciples and he says like, hey, you're going to see angels in ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Do you guys remember that passage? Maybe some of you guys a little bit. And so then what's his point there? Why is he bringing it up as well? It's the same thing. He's like, God is with you. Like, I am with you. Okay, that's the point. And we see that even emphasized in one of Jesus' names as the Messiah is Emmanuel, which means what? God with us, right? And so we see that being built upon as well. But that's what we see here with Jacob, right? Is this dream is indicating that God is with you, right? He's with you. Okay? And we see that the Lord speaks to him, right? Like, and we see that he essentially, like, I'm the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. And he essentially, again, reaffirms these promises of the Abrahamic covenant. Again, saying that you are the one, right? Like, it went from Abraham to Isaac. Now it's going to be through Jacob, okay? And don't miss verse 15 where he says, behold, what? I am with you, right? Again, this emphasis, okay? And he says, I will keep you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land, right? And we see Jacob's response, right? It's kind of interesting, right? It's kind of good, but there's an element where you're like, he still doesn't quite understand this, right? Because notice, would someone like to read, let's see, verses 20 to 21 there? 20 to 21? Someone like to read those couple of verses? Brad? Thanks.
Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me on this journey that I take, and will give me food to eat and garments to wear, and I return to my father's house in safety, then the Lord will be my God.
Awesome. So, kind of an interesting response, right? Because God promises, like, I'm going to be with you, I am your God, all these things. And what's Jacob kind of say? He's like, well, yeah, if you are with me, you bring me back here, then you can be my God. It's kind of like a weird response, right? It's like he's trying to, like, bargain. Again, this schemer mentality, right? Where he's trying to always manipulate the situation and kind of, like, working of, like, yeah, God, okay, if you do this, then you can be my God. It's like, okay, he's your God whether or not you like it, right? Like, and so we see that there's still some room for growth here. He needs to grow in his understanding of his relationship between him and God, right? And all of that. Okay, he doesn't fully quite grasp that. Okay, but again, this is an important place. And so then, like I said, he renames this place Bethel, right? Which, do you know what Bethel means? House of God, right? In Hebrew, it means house of God. And so that's where you can understand why he says that, right? Because God was there. He's present, showing him, I am with you. And he names that place Bethel, for which means house of God. Okay? All right. So Jacob continues on, okay? Arrives in the land of his relatives. And immediately he meets a girl by the name of Rachel, okay? Which he finds out is one of the daughters of Laban, one of Rebecca's brother, okay? And so he wants to marry her, and he meets Laban and all that. And what you need to know about Laban, right, is, like people describe him, he is also a schemer, okay? But he's also much better at it than Jacob, okay? That's what you need to understand, right? He is a schemer as well, just like Jacob, but he's better at it than Jacob, okay? And so we're going to see, again, Laban kind of working and scheming and trying to work things out that in ways that should have worked, if not for who was with Jacob? God, right? That all of Laban's plans, like, they make sense. They should have worked. But the only reason they don't is because God is with Jacob, right? A lot of Jacob's schemes, like, you're kind of like, really? Like, that didn't seem like that was going to go well, right? That didn't quite make sense, as we're going to see a little bit later, too, like some of the stuff he tries. But with Laban, like, all of his kind of makes sense, okay? But, again, the Lord is going to be with Jacob, and he's going to intervene, okay? And so one of the first ways, right, this scheming kind of starts to take place. Again, you hopefully know the story. Jacob loves Rachel, tells Laban, like, they strike up a deal that he's going to work for Laban for 7 years in order to marry Rachel. And on the feast or the wedding that night, who does Laban give to be his wife? Leah, right? Not Rachel, right? Leah. And so gives Leah. And that's that whole big deal, right? And then Jacob confronts Laban, okay, saying this is not what we agreed to, all that. And what does Laban do? He says, well, tell you what, finish out this week of the feast or whatever, then I'll give you Rachel as your wife, but you have to work for me for another 7 years, right? Schemer, right? And does Jacob kind of do it, go along with it? Yes, right, he does. Okay, and so Laban's not dumb, right? He has understood, as we're going to see a little bit later, that God has blessed Jacob and blessed Laban because of Jacob. Okay, that whole idea of blessing, right, taking place. And so he understands, hey, I want to keep this guy around, kind of a thing, right? And so he gets another 7 years out of Jacob, okay? As well as, some people kind of argue, like, if you notice, it's different, right? Because when does he get Rachel? Is it at the end of the 7 years or at the beginning?
At the beginning.
At the beginning, right? He doesn't work the 7 years, then gets Rachel. He gets Rachel, like, right at the beginning, or like, right after that week of the wedding feast with Leah, right? And so some people kind of argue that's intentional to try to what? Create discord amongst that family, right? To kind of almost sabotage that family, okay? And that seems to be the case, right? Because again, if your husband, right, you just like finish your wedding and then the next day your husband's marrying someone else, you're not going to be too happy, right? And that's what we see here. And it does create discord. It does create kind of this dynamic within the family that's not good, right? But rather than kind of imploding, right, and the family kind of falling apart, we see what? God intervening again, right? And we see that they actually end up bearing a lot of children, right? And some people describe it as they have like a childbearing contest and they keep kind of producing children, right? That's kind of what ends up happening, okay? But what we need to note as well, in verse 31, what do we see about Rachel? She's what? She's barren, okay? Again, that should raise up those triggers, those flags, right? That then that's going to be significant. And it is, because who does she give birth to eventually?
Joseph.
Joseph, right? Who, he's pretty significant, right? Pretty significant, all right? So it continues happening. So children start being born, right? From like Leah, from their servants, right? They're being born as well. Kind of that surrogate mother type of thing as well. And then finally, Rachel does give birth to a son, which is Joseph. Okay, as we see kind of at the end there in verses 22 to 24. Okay, but we see the point of this, right, is what? God has promised this idea of this seed, this offspring continuing forward. And that's what we have. This nation is moving forward. Because these 12 sons, or eventually the 12 sons we have, are going to be the 12 tribes of Israel, right? They're going to be 12 tribes of Israel. So this is the beginnings of this nation, right, that God has promised, okay? The plan is moving forward in all of this. And we see that God continues to prosper Jacob, right? He continues to prosper Jacob, okay? Causes Jacob to prosper. And we see, right, that Jacob starts to understand he needs to get back where? To the land, right? He needs to get back to his home, like the land of Canaan, the land that God had promised him. Okay, he understands this. And so essentially he tells Laban, like, hey, I need to go. Kind of give me what is fair, like the wives and children, and as well as the possessions, because obviously the Lord has blessed me. Or Laban recognized even, like, the Lord has blessed him because of Jacob. And so then they strike up this deal where Jacob will take all the speckled stripes, all those, like, kind of livestock and all that. But we have to remember Laban's a schemer, right? So what does he do before Jacob walks through the land? He sends all the speckled, spotted, striped kind of livestock with his sons, and they like take away all those sheep. So there's none left, right? Kind of like, yeah, he's one step ahead of them, all right? All the time. And then this is where, again, you see Jacob kind of scheming, all right? Where when that happens, Jacob develops this plan, where he's going to take some sticks, right, and he's going to peel them, and so then there's these white streaks in them, and he's going to put them in the troughs of the livestock, and so that when they come to drink, that's also the area that they would breed and all that, and so he's like, when they are breeding, they will see these white stripes, and then they will produce offspring that have stripes and speckles. And you're like, is that how it works? No, right? That's not. And so this is what I was saying before, right? Where Jacob has these schemes that you're like, what? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And even like back then, this wasn't really like a thing that like everyone viewed highly of like, oh yeah, like this is a smart idea. It's like even back then people recognized this is kind of like folklore, like doesn't really happen. Okay. But especially today, we're like, that's obviously not how it works, right? Like, that's not what's going to be the case, okay? But what ends up happening? It works, right? It works. Like, it does produce these speckled, spotted lambs and all that. But is it because Jacob's scheme actually worked? No, right? It's because who intervened? God, right? Again, this Jacob schemes, but God redeems, right? That's on full display here. Okay, even in situations you're like, that doesn't make any sense, God uses it still to intervene. Okay? So he continues to cause Jacob to prosper. And we see then, coming into chapter 31, that again, the Lord then also instructs him, like, Return to the land, right? It says in verse 3, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you. Right? Again, that emphasis. And so then, once again, Jacob develops kind of a scheme, a plan, right? Where he waits for Laban to kind of go shear his sheep, livestock, goes away for a couple days. And what does Jacob do? Do you guys remember? You guys remember what he does? He kind of takes everything and like runs, right? Kind of takes his wife, kids, livestock, and just like flees. Doesn't tell Laban he's going, right? But he just kind of runs away, flees, okay? And so then you have to think through this. Why would that not necessarily be smart? Well, one, when you're traveling with a bunch of livestock and kids, do you feel like you're going to move very fast? No, right? You're going to move pretty slow, which explains why Laban, he gets like his kindred, like his like brothers and stuff, like people who can ride fast. He doesn't like, hey, kids, come along too, right? He's like, no, he gets like his brothers and they catch up to them in like a day or two, right? Like a few days, they catch him, right? Doesn't work very well. All right, so that's not smart. Second, in that time and in that culture, right, since Jacob and his family were under the roof of Laban and all that, right, Laban was essentially considered like the head of the household, right? And so then in that culture, especially at that time, who did like the kids and the wives and the property, all that essentially kind of belonged to as the head of the household? Laban, right? And so then if you one day just vanish with his daughters and grandkids, what is that? What do we call that? Kidnapping, right? Not a good idea, right? And especially at that time where what? Kind of the punishment for that is death, right? Death. Okay? And we see that if you look at verse 29, what does Laban say when he like confronts him? He says, "It is in my power to do you harm," right? He's like, "I have full right to harm you," which could be putting to death or imprisonment or something, and all that, right? So this is not a good plan. But if you look at the rest of verse 29, notice this, right? He says, "It is in my power to do you harm, but what? But the God of your father spoke to me last night," right? Who intervened again? God. Jacob schemes, God redeems, right? In the same way, this kind of foolish plan, but God causes it to work. Not because Jacob is so smart and so great, but because God has intervened and is moving forward and continually showing to Jacob time and time again, I am with you. I am fighting for you, right? And you need essentially to trust me, right? That's what he needs to recognize. And Jacob is beginning to slowly recognize this, right? Like in verse 42, he kind of recognizes that if he says, like, if the God of my father had not been on my side, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed, right? Like, he recognizes that God is on his side. He's starting to process this, right? But he still struggles, right? He still struggles. Okay, and so he kind of survives this interaction, okay, with Laban. And so he continues towards the land, but he has an even much bigger obstacle waiting for him in the land, right? Because who else wants to kill him besides Laban? Esau, right? So the next obstacle is Esau, okay? All right, someone who really does want to kill him, right? Last we had Esau, he was really wanting to kill Jacob. And so now he has to deal with this obstacle. So he dealt with Laban, but now Esau. Okay? But again, we see right away Jacob kind of scheming. Okay? And he develops a couple plans, right? Because he sends some like scouts out and they're like, Esau has a ton of people, they're coming. And Jacob's like, okay, let's develop some plans. Okay? And so his first one in like verses 6 or 7 and 8, he divides like his people into like two separate camps, right? He divides them into two camps with the idea being, hey, if one gets attacked, maybe the other will get away, right? But that also, in dividing your camp into two, it kind of weakens both of them, right? So now you just have two weaker camps. Not that great, right? Not a great idea. And then he prays to the Lord, asking that the Lord would help him. And you're like, awesome, he's starting to get it, right? But then, after he prays, right, verse 13 on, he decides to send a present to his brother Esau, right, with a bunch of goats and all these possessions. And what do we call something like sending a present to someone who wants to kill you? a bribe, right? It's like, hey, don't kill me. Here's this stuff, right? He's trying to kind of pay him off, right? So again, you see Jacob scheming, right? He still doesn't get it, okay? Still doesn't get it. He's still trying to scheme here, okay? And even he recognizes, right? If you look at like verse, is that 20? Yeah, verse 20 at the end there. He even recognizes because he says, after this whole plan, he says, perhaps he will accept me. Right? And that perhaps is a very strong, like, perhaps, like, probably not, right? Like, I don't know. Like, he might accept me, okay? Even he has doubt that this will work, okay? And that leads into chapter 32. All right, I've got to move quick with this, where we have that story of him wrestling with this man, all right? Jacob wrestling with this man who he find out to be, like, God eventually, okay? He wrestles with God. And you're kind of like, this is strange. He just suddenly starts wrestling with a man, all right? But kind of the idea of what is going on here is that this is kind of reenacting Jacob's life up to this point, right? This is really reenacting Jacob's life up to this point where he is continually wrestling with who? God. He's always trying to scheme. He's always trying to wrestle, right? He's always trying to work some way, and this is what his life is, right? And even at one point, right, if you're reading it, you might get the idea that he seems to kind of be like winning, right? You're like, well, he seems to be doing pretty good, right? Until what? It says like the man kind of like, you know what, whatever. And he touches like his hip socket and it dislocates his hip and it's like the fight's over, right? Which shows what? That this man or God, right, was in control like the whole time. And again, that's this picture of Jacob's life where even though he might think as he's going through life with all these different schemes, he's kind of continually thinking, I'm winning. I'm doing great. I'm doing awesome, right? Who's actually in control and working behind all of it? God, right? This is a picture, a reenactment essentially of his life up till now and helps us to interpret his life up to this point, okay? And so we see from this interaction, right, the man then asks him, what is your name? And he says, Jacob, right? And he says this not because he doesn't know his name, right? Like, God knows his name, okay? But it's, again, to have Jacob recognize, yeah, I'm Jacob, and to point out, this is also how you're acting. You are acting like a Jacob, right? You're acting like a schemer, a wrestler, a struggler, right? That's who you have been. And so then he changes his name from Jacob to what? Israel, right? In Israel, some translations say like it's like he strives with God or something like that, but probably better it's that this idea of God strives or God fights, with the implication being like God fights for you, right? This kind of idea. And so by that name change, right, God is essentially telling Jacob, like, you've been acting like a Jacob, continually scheming, wrestling, doing all that, but you need to be in Israel. You need to recognize that what? God fights for you. That's what you need to recognize, right? That's what the name Israel essentially means, right? Is that God fights, or God fights for you. And that's going to, again, be foundational for the whole nation of Israel to recognize. God is always the one fighting for you, okay? And that's what Jacob needs to understand. All right, let's try to get through these few chapters real quick before a break. All right, so then next chapter, 33. Oh, and also real quick in that section to confirm like that he understood it was God too. He names the place Peniel, which means face of God, okay? But then in chapter 33, we see that he does meet Esau. And again, he still has kind of his own scheme and plan, right? Because he hears Esau is coming, right? And then he divides all his wives and children into three groups, right? Like Rachel and her son, Leah and her sons, and the servants and their sons. And he makes this line, right, where he puts the servants and their kids in the front, then Leah and her sons, and then Rachel and her sons. What do you think is the purpose of that? If Esau starts attacking, who's he going to attack first? The servants' kids, right? And who's the most protected? Yeah, like Rachel and Joseph, right? And so if you're a child of Jacob and you ever wondered, I wonder where God or my dad ranks me amongst my kids, you have a prime example, right? Right there of, hey, remember you put us in the front that one time, right? Like, that's not good. And they're not going to actually forget this. So right away, you can see that who does he love most? Joseph, right? Which we're going to see confirmed later on. But that when we get to that point, that shouldn't come as a surprise because of this. And all the siblings would have known that, right? That would have stuck, I'm sure that would have stuck with them forever, right? It's like, we were your shield. That's not great, okay? And so even though he schemes, right, again, God redeems the situation, right? Because Esau comes up, and what does he do? Like, they have actually a peaceful interaction, right? They wept, embrace each other, and it's a peaceful thing. Like, God, again, intervenes and allows that when it doesn't make sense, okay? And then they end up splitting ways. Esau goes back to Seir, and then Jacob continues in the land and settles at Shechem, all right? And at Shechem, you have chapter 34 with a very sad and tragic situation, right? Where the daughter of Jacob, right, Dina, she ends up being raped by the prince of the land of Shechem, and his name is Shechem, okay? So obviously kind of a big person there. Okay, so he rapes her and then tells his dad, hey, I want her as my wife. And so his dad, Hamor, goes to Jacob. And how does, like, Jacob react? Does he really do anything? Like, if you're looking, like, in verse 5, he doesn't really do anything, right? It says, like, now Jacob heard that he defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came, right? He doesn't really do much, okay? And it seems, kind of based on the situation, that he wasn't going to really do much, which you're like, that's terrible. Yes, right? It is. And again, you see him somewhat kind of scheming, because essentially he's going to try to use this situation to his advantage. And we see that, right, later on when Hamor is talking about how they'll be able to trade with each other. They'll have property. We can even intermarry amongst each other, right? Like, all these benefits. And we're going to see later on, too, like, Jacob, that seems to be the appealing thing, and he doesn't want anything to come back on him, right? As we're going to see a little bit later. He's like, I don't want them to, like, attack me or whatever, right? He wants to just be at peace with these people, kind of a thing. So he doesn't really do anything, which is not great, okay? Not good, okay? But then his sons find out about it, right? And they get pretty angry, right? They get really angry. And so they develop this plan, right, where they're kind of like, hey, yeah, we'll give her to be your wife just as long as all the guys in your city are circumcised, right? And so then the people are like, cool, let's do it, right? Like, so they do it. And then while they're all kind of recovering from that, what do Simeon and Levi do? Yeah, they go through the city and, like, kill everyone, right? Pretty extreme response, right? And so even though, like, they kind of responded wrongly, because did the whole city deserve to die for that? No, right? Like, who deserved the punishment? Like, the people who did it, right? The people who were guilty. And so Simeon and Levi, like, even though acting wrongly in that sense, they at least kind of were better than Jacob, right? Because they actually dealt with that sin, right? And all that. Whereas Jacob, as we see at the end of the passage here, was just concerned about himself, right? Because even after all this happens, what does he say? In verse 30, he says, you have brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitants of the land, right? My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household, right? Who is he concerned about? Himself, right? In all this terrible situation, he is concerned about himself. And at least, like, the brothers are like, should he treat our sister like a prostitute? Like, they understand, like, you needed to do something, right? And Jacob has no response to that, right? And so we, again, see that Jacob is growing. Like, he needs to grow, right? He's still not there yet, okay? And in verse 30, or chapter 35, we see that God tells him, return to Bethel, right? And so he goes there. And why is it significant that God has him return to Bethel? Because do you remember the kind of ridiculous bargain he made with God? Of like, hey, if you're with me, you bring me back, then you'll be my God. And what's God essentially saying by bringing him back here? It's like, I did it. I'm your God, right? Like, I did what you said, and I have been with you. I'm your God. There it is, right? And that's why you then have Jacob kind of gathering all their foreign gods and idols and stuff and getting rid of them all. Because it's at this point he does start to kind of change, right? He's starting to change. Okay? And again, God reaffirms the promises. And then you have the deaths of Rachel and Isaac, right? Rachel dies giving birth to Benjamin, right? So now we have the last of the 12 sons that make up the 12 tribes of Israel. You have Benjamin, okay? And then, so Rachel dies, and then Isaac dies as well, okay? And then in chapter 36, you just have Esau's descendants, right? Kind of like we've seen with Ishmael and others before, that God does give some form of blessing to these people, even if they're not part of the chosen line, okay? So we'll take